Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Perth, Australia. And regarding the Indian Ocean, looking at the world from the southern hemisphere, now late winter, anticipating springtime. Gregory Copley joins, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to comment on a presentation Gregory has just returned from, the Australian Leadership Retreat in Adelaide, Australia, and the title of the presentation, The Future of Post-Industrial Nations, specifically Australia. Gregory, a very good day to you. What's wrong with Australia? Nothing, mate. It does very well in cricket, for example. However, I learned from you that one measure of Australia is requires a great deal of attention, the Australian currency. What's happened, Gregory? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, yeah, I can talk about my presentation or one of my presentations to the retreat because I can't talk about anybody else's participation because it's all on Chatham House rules. But my own presentation is fair game. What's wrong with Australia is that it has been in a utopian state, a utopianist state for the last century, really. It's had a very good history, in a sense, that it's been known as the lucky country. In other words, everything worked out for it. It was agriculturally super abundant in resources, and including gold and the like. So it really was a very wealthy country per capita. And it was a very productive country per capita. It built an industrial economy on several occasions, only to stand it down from time to time for various reasons, which I can discuss. But the reality is that in the past few decades, it has been slipping behind all of the other regional states in terms of growth rates in GDP. And it's been particularly slipping behind in per capita GDP and per capita core wealth. It has stopped being an industrial society again to a large degree. It's no longer as self-reliant as it once was. And that might not be a problem in peacetime, but it is certainly a problem when you have a world in which the global economy is at risk and in which supply lanes supply lines are threatened by either conflict or economic collapse or the natural disasters which might prevail in certain parts of the world affecting markets and supply. So Australia is now still regarding itself as a very wealthy country, a utopianist country. Australians believe that we are entitled to be a wealthy post-industrial society, fully automated, dominated by pleasure and a high standard of living. And in fact, it is a high standard of living, but it's actually a fantasy because what happens is that when the money runs out, or the value of your money runs out, you can no longer buy the things you thought you could afford. There's that wonderful film in the United States called A Green Leaf with Walter Matthau as a billionaire who spent all his money and insisted to the bank that he wasn't broke because he still had some checks left in his checkbook. Well, Australia is in much the same situation. And you mentioned that one of the problems which I highlighted was the strength of the Australian currency. And Australia's wealth exists only for as long as its currency holds strength. And that's true of every country. And the United States is understanding that now, as for the first time since World War II, the dollar has come under attack. because of the United States using it so strongly as a weapon to punish other states. But the strength or value of any currency is primarily psychological. So as long as people still want to trade in your currency and they believe in it, they believe that it'll hold, then there's all's well. But if the currency is perceived to have no prestige or the government has no prestige to back up the currency, then the currency value plummets. And that was particularly true in Australia. The Australian dollar was only in 2011 valued at $1.10 US. In other words, it took $1.10 American to buy a dollar Australian. The Australian dollar now trades for 68 US cents. So since 2011, in other words, a decade and a half, the Australian currency has had a 40% decline. And think about how that came about. Australia on St. Valentine's Day in 1966 adopted the dollar as its currency. The Australian dollar, it signified a final breakaway from the mother country, Britain, with its pounds, shillings and pence, to the protection of the United States with its dollars and cents. We didn't even have the sense at that time, and I made the comment at that time, to create a currency with an Australian origin name, just to show that we were, in fact, a sovereign nation. But the fact is that Australians have never wanted to leave the parental home. They were very happy to be subordinate to Britain in the command of global affairs, in foreign policy directions, even to the stage of declaring war, when in both world wars, when Britain went to war, Australia went to war. And when the UK, without intent, essentially abandoned Australia with the fall of Singapore in February 1942, we just found a new parent in the United States. We just don't want to take responsibility for ourselves.
And that surprises me, Gregory. That surprises me because of our years of conversation and other Australians I've met. This is a standalone country. Stand for yourself and your friends and your family. It surprises me that, in a way, you outsourced your sovereignty between 1942 and today. Was that one decision made, or was that a series of prime ministers who didn't see what was happening?
Well, it was a series of prime ministers, but it did start with the wartime Prime Minister John Curtin, who basically saw there was no alternative for Australia because Australia lost so many troops trying to support the British forces in Malaya and Singapore, and lost them all as prisoners of war, largely because the military leaders there would not let Australians avoid capture by the Japanese by abandoning Singapore. So the British military leadership at the time insisted that Australians had to join with the Brits and surrender en masse to the Japanese. And of course, that meant tens of thousands of Australian troops going into Japanese labor camps and the like. So basically, Australia had to look to the United States because Australia was not really ready for war at that stage. And the United States proved to be a very beneficial and supportive ally, although the United States absolutely needed Australia's geography if it was ever to defeat the Japanese at that stage. And so it was a mutually beneficial relationship. And you saw the Battle of the Coral Sea. We saw General MacArthur taking command of Australian troops. In fact, when he was reporting, for example, his great victories in Papua New Guinea and up through the islands in the early stages, he always said, "Allied forces under my command," and so on. The reality was the only Allied forces under his command were Australian and New Zealand troops. There were no American troops in that initial phase.
That's 80 years ago. Since then, has there been a debate about this in Australia? My experience is if you depend upon the United States, you're going to be in trouble at some point.
Well, yes, because the United States is going to do what it needs to do for its own purposes or its own good or mismanaged leadership, whatever it is. The United States is responsible only for the United States. And yet Australians decided that we would just tag along with that. And it was the final turning point was when Sir Robert Menzies was Prime Minister in the late 60s, and he basically saw the writing on the wall, and Australia was at that stage poised to buy the TSR-2, which was the most advanced strike aircraft, you know, bomber, if you'd like, in the world at that point. It was just in prototype stage, but the British had succeeded in getting the Royal Australian Air Force to agree to buy the TSR-2, which would have been a phenomenal weapon system, which would have led the region in strategic power for decades. But Menzies basically thought that the British government was in trouble, so he turned to his defense minister, Ethel Townley, and said, do the Americans have anything like this? And Townley said, well, they're developing a thing called the TFX, ultimately to become the F-111, which was in no way comparable with the TSR-2. And so Menzies dispatched Townley to Washington and said, buy it on the same terms as the U.S. Air Force. Well, that was a big mistake, too, because the aircraft did have huge problems. And so the cost of the aircraft went up astronomically and its delivery time delayed by years. But that was the turning point. And since then, Australians have subordinated themselves to the United States. And because the Australians proved so competent as senior and operational level military personnel, the Australians are now in senior command positions in US Indo-PACOM and in the Special Operations Command and the like. Australians are in demand because of their capability, but not because they are making any strategic leadership. But Australians think, well, we're good enough for the Yanks to admire, so that's good enough for us, instead of saying, look, Australia's job is to project and protect Australia's strategic interests, and our strategic interests, including Antarctica, but up through the Indo-Pacific, particularly the Indian Ocean and the Southeast Asian islands and Papua New Guinea and further north. These are of critical importance to Australia's survival, and we've lost domination, in a sense, over the Pacific Islands Forum countries, all the island states of the South Pacific, including Papua New Guinea and including New Zealand and Australia itself. But we've lost that sort of respect there.
You're the anchor of the defense from the aggression of the People's Republic of China. So we need to look at what must be done to return Australia to its full sovereignty. There will be a day the U.S. needs you, Gregory. And when we come back, what is to be done? Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Battle.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.